We will start. So what we did last time is look at this matrix element of J mu 5, J nu, J lambda, and at least one of P 0 mu, gamma mu nu, lambda, P 1 nu, gamma mu nu, lambda, or P 2 lambda, gamma mu nu, lambda is non-zero. And I understand yesterday in the tutorials, you went through some of the graphology of that. And if you look at gamma tilde, which is basically the same thing, but all, oopsie daisy, that should be, let me put all these upstairs. If you look at the product, the time-ordered product of three axial currents, then this implies, so this first statement implies that d mu j mu 5 non-zero or d mu J mu is non-zero, but this latter case, when you look at it, tells us that it's the axial current conservation that we have to lose. So the first one says you could either give up this or give up that, but this one says you, this is the one you've got to give up, is this conservation. Yeah.
Last time you wrote down J5A.
This should say a 5, sorry.
Last time you wrote down J5A mu.
Yeah, I did, yeah. So to put these in is, let me see. So this diagram, gamma mu nu lambda, in diagram language, you would put three current operators at vertices and have something like that. This would be J mu 5, J nu, J lambda. And what I did last time is couple these directly to photons. But if you look at it from the perspective of quantum operators, you could just ask, what is the expectation value of the time-ordered product of these three operators? And classically, they just are what they are. But quantum mechanically, there's a probability that this could emit a fermion-antifermion pair that's absorbed by these others in this particular way. And likewise for the gamma tilde, this one's just exactly the same thing, except they're all J mu 5 operators there. So then you can decide whether or not you want to couple these to gauge fields. And the reason why these were coupled to gauge fields is in QED, we have a gauge theory in which psi bar gamma mu psi couples to a photon. But the J mu 5 symmetry was global, and it did not have a gauge field associated with it. So what I'm doing is stepping back a bit, and I'm saying, I don't know if I'm even coupling. I can step back and say, I don't even have to decide if I want to couple this to a gauge field and this to some other gauge field, because I'm in big trouble conservation-wise whether I do or not. Does that make sense? Okay. So, so this phenomenon is more widespread, and that's what we want to look at now. And there are basically two kinds of anomalies, hence the title for today, abelian and non-abelian. And it is a subtle and perhaps confusing distinction, because a non-abelian theory can have both abelian and non-abelian anomalies. It does not mean an abelian theory has an abelian anomaly and a non-abelian has non-abelian anomaly. So we're going to spell out that distinction. So suppose instead we have this kind of matrix element. I have J mu 5, and then something happens, and whatever happens, at the end of the process, a pair of photons come out. Well, this thing can be written as the matrix element of this pair of photon states initially with this current operator acting on it and then going into the vacuum. So if I have minus I P0, let me put this downstairs here, P0 mu acting on this thing, then this will be a d mu j mu 5. When I Fourier transform it, and then this thing here is equal to the time ordered product of d mu j mu 5 times a nu of p1 a lambda of p2 on the vacuum times these polarizations epsilon 1 nu epsilon 2 lambda. And this thing here is what we looked at before. It's minus I P0 mu gamma mu nu lambda times epsilon 1 nu epsilon 2 lambda. So this first part is just this gamma object over there. And the second part is, this part just contracts onto it. And then what I hope a combination of the class and tutorial persuaded you on is that this was equal to P2 beta with these epsilon polarizations. So this is the polarization of photon 1. This is the polarization of photon 2. So that's what that matrix element would be. But now, if we consider this other matrix element, we can ask, what is the time-ordered product of epsilon mu nu alpha beta, f mu nu f alpha beta? What is the expectation value of that time-ordered product? Well, it's equal to 4 times epsilon mu nu alpha beta times 0 of the time ordered product of d mu a nu d alpha a beta. And I don't want to do 0. I'm sorry. I want to start with the state I had. And then, basically, this is a quantum operator that will create and annihilate photons. So this will annihilate one of the photons here, and this will annihilate the other photon here. So we'll get a non-zero vacuum expectation value if you just put in the quantum operators. And the answer is we'll get 4i squared. And this one will do one of these, so we'll get a factor of 2. And the other one will do whatever is left over. So that's where that factor of 2 comes from. And I get epsilon mu nu alpha beta times p1 mu epsilon 1 nu p2 alpha epsilon 2 beta. And that's exactly the same expression as what I have over there. In fact, if I relabel the indices, I just get minus 8 times epsilon nu alpha lambda beta P1 exactly alpha, P2 beta, epsilon 1, nu, epsilon 2, lambda when you relabel all those things. And so what this leads to, let's put that way up there. So what this leads to is a relationship between the axial current divergence and the electromagnetic field strength. Those two matrix elements give the same thing. So we get d mu j mu 5 is equal to e squared over 16 pi squared times epsilon nu alpha lambda beta f nu alpha f lambda beta, or alpha over 2 pi times f mu nu f dual mu nu, where by definition f dual is equal to 1 half epsilon mu nu alpha beta f alpha beta, and alpha is the familiar e squared over 4 pi from QED. It's 1 over 137, yeah.
What time we're writing these equations as operator equations?
Yeah.
What times we're writing these equations as operator equations, although we're probably calculating them within some expectation value. So is that always true, or?
As opposed to what? I'm assuming that J is a quantum operator made out of fermions, and so is J mu and J mu 5 are quantum operators made out of fermions. I could write down, maybe I should write down what I mean by them. So what I mean by this is, I guess I need this down a little lower. So what I mean by this is J mu is defined as psi bar gamma mu psi, and J mu 5 is defined as psi bar gamma mu gamma 5 psi, and I'm assuming the psis are quantum operators, and likewise, so are the, in over there, the photons are assumed as quantum operators. Here, I don't need that because the currents are quantum operators. So yes, it's all in that context. What, I'm not sure what else you're thinking of. So one would conclude that quantum effects mean this is non-zero. It's equal actually to FF dual. And this is called the abelian anomaly, or sometimes the U1 anomaly, which is just really the same thing. So, yeah.
It's still a little unclear to me that you can say that as an operator statement, because it seems like, so we showed that for a very special, you know, matrix element, right? But it seems like that they can be, they can differ by something that has vanishing matrix elements, like between other two. So I mean,
I'm not sure. What are you thinking of?
You computed, you know, the matrix element with the vacuum and then this state with two photons in it.
Yeah. Right, okay, I see you're saying maybe there's some other thing that, so maybe, so you're thinking maybe this is equal to this plus something that would be killed by those matrix elements. So you are correct. I cannot draw, it's sort of necessary, but not sufficient. You're right. So I cannot draw the conclusion that there is not anything else here that would cause this operator to be exactly equal to that. However, what turns out to be the case is this relationship, and I'm suppressing those arguments here, that basically you can show that there are no other operators that can destroy this relationship. People looked into that, but that's a lot of detail. So you're right, you're right. This argument is enough to show that it's got to be at least that, to show that, in fact, there is nothing further does require more work, and I'm suppressing that. So you're right. Yeah, that can be shown. But I mean, that will sidetrack us considerably. But you're right, you're right. But it at least must be this, and in fact, it turns out this is all that you get. You can do that basically by just considering what other possible operators there might be and showing they're all basically null. The abelian character is a consequence not of the fact that we have abelian gauge fields. A non-abelian gauge field can have an abelian anomaly. So that is basically the next item. So non-abelian gauge fields, or maybe I should say gauge theories, can also have U1 anomalies. So what is that? Well, let's consider this QCD thing where the Lagrangian for QCD is the sum. Oh yeah, and this is where I have this problem with the quark flavors in terms of notation. So I'll call it capital A QA bar I D slash QA, where the Qs are fermion wave functions. I might write them as Dirac psis if I wanted to, but I'm putting Qs in just to remind you they are quarks. And minus a quarter times the trace of F mu nu, where this is F mu nu A is equal to the non-abelian gauge current IGCABCABAC mu nu. And so this thing also has a global axial current. So we also have here a J mu 5, which would be the sum for as many flavors as we've got of gamma Q bar, gamma mu, gamma 5 Q, summed over all the possible flavors. And that is... that current follows just by looking at this transformation, Q prime A is equal to E to the I theta gamma 5 QA, where those have to be understood as fermion wave functions, and theta is a constant. This is a global symmetry at this point. So if you put this in here, it's not hard to show this is invariant under that transformation, and then using Nutter's theorem, you can show this is the associated current. So we have this diagram that is analogous to what's up there. We still have this J mu 5 here, and we can have a pair of quarks coming out. And now we will have gluons, P1A, P2B. So I want to look at that, but by the same logic, it's going to be the divergence of that thing acting on these quark states. The only difference now is that I have color indices for the gluons. but everything else is exactly the same as what I had before. I get minus, well, let me write it this way. I'll get g squared over 2 pi squared, just like I can't see up there, times epsilon nu alpha lambda beta, p1 alpha, p2 beta, epsilon 1 nu, epsilon 2 lambda, and I'll get the product of the gauge generators here, but I will have to trace over them because they will be, those gauge generators will come from some interaction that these gluons have with a fermion in the loop, and whatever other stuff happens, I at least have to get that. If I have higher order corrections, well, I'll show you what happens to them later on, but I must at least get that. And then I have to get this for every quark flavor, and they all give the same thing, so I get the total, I get NF for the number of flavors, and this thing boils down to this expression here. The trace over this pair of generators is just delta AB times a half, if it's SU3 color. And so what ends up happening is you get exactly the same thing. You can show there is nothing else that contributes on the FF dual side. So you get minus NF g squared over 16 pi squared times the trace of FF dual by comparing to this quantity here. By comparing to that matrix element and going through the same argument, you basically will find that what comes out here is you'll get epsilon with the derivatives from this pair of terms. You'll also get cross terms of this times this and this times itself. But because you only have two gluon states in this matrix element here, the only thing that contributes, that gives you non-zero, is the product of dA with dA. Anything with A cubed is killed, and anything with A to the fourth is killed. So the non-abelian part of F, by which I mean this part of F, does not make a contribution to that matrix element. So it's exactly the same logic as is written up there. The only difference is you've got the two color indices, the delta AB. So this is an abelian anomaly that this QCD Lagrangian actually does have. In other words, if you gave the quarks zero mass in this theory, then you would find that its ostensibly conserved classical current is not really conserved. It's equal to that. And likewise, even in QED, we'll get one of these for every charged particle. So here I've just assumed one charged particle, but every charged particle will have this. So you really get the sum over the number of charges in the theory. And so,
suppose in QCD we do have masses, But these diagrams would still be there.
Yes, those diagrams are still there. The difference is we don't expect J to be a classical symmetry. But so you might not worry about it in that sense. The problem is that we believe that all quark masses are given by couplings to the Higgs particle, and that you could actually, in a fundamental Lagrangian with Higgs coupling, you actually can get, wherever it disappeared to, this the kind of symmetry, this, there it is, this kind of symmetry. And so it really is a problem. Because although you've got a psi bar psi with a Higgs field, there is a way of coupling that to still preserve this symmetry. And so, okay, so so what's a non-abelian anomaly? So let's consider, so a non-abelian anomaly is this. What is a non-abelian anomaly? Let's look at L star is the sum over the number of flavors of psi bar A I D slash plus I A slash And I'm going to write A as some vector part plus some axial vector part. So suppose I have this kind of thing, and there might be field strengths. There could be a field strength for this thing, or rather I should say a field strength for this and a field strength for that, but I'm not going to bother to write that down. So we have L star goes to L star if psi prime equals e to the I theta gamma 5 psi, and this leads to that J mu 5 current, and if I put an A there, I should sum over A for the number of flavors. So I have that, and that has an abelian anomaly, but I also have L star going to L if psi prime of A of X psi prime of A is equal to e to the I theta times, I've got to keep my indices straight here, theta A TA gamma 5 AB psi B, and I will call this U AB psi B. So in other words, if you replace psi with psi prime and psi bar with psi bar prime, defined like so, and if you do this, if A mu prime is equal to U A mu U inverse plus I U inverse D mu U, where this A is this A. So there are indices there. So then you find that the associated current is equal to psi bar A, gamma mu, I'm going to run out of room here, aren't I? I'm going to make this a bit smaller to give myself more room. Inverse I, U inverse D mu U. Then the current is equal to psi bar gamma mu gamma 5 psi, except I have in here now a T. AB, psi B, and I've got an index like so. So this is called the non-abelian axial current. Just a sec, let me write that. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a little confused about the Lagrangian equation. What is this? Is this TA some sort of mixing matrix between the different flavors?
Yeah, it's a mixing matrix between the different flavors. Or different kinds of quarks, yeah. Sorry? I'm summing over these things. So this thing mixes up the different kinds of size, and there are as many of these as there are generators.
There should be a sum over B as well?
A sum over... Oh, I'm sorry, yes, there should be a sum over B. Now I see what you're, yeah, is that what the confusion is? I didn't write down the sum in here explicitly. It should be, it's a sum over B and A.
In QTD, the capital letters would be the quark color indices and the lowercase letters would be the gluon color indices?
Yeah, yeah. So let me put that back down. So the, where was I? The Nutter current. And so we expect, you can show by Nutter's theorem, Nutter theorem, we expect that d mu of j mu 5 a, I guess, because the d has indices there, is equal to zero. And this will not be the case. So there'll be a loss of abelian, well, let me put this, QFT corrections will destroy this. So, where was I? Right. So, yeah.
So, the idea here, you took the, I guess, global flavor symmetry and promoted it to a local symmetry.
Yeah, this actually, this is a gauging of this, so I really do have a local symmetry there.
So you gauged the flavor
symmetry. Yeah, I've gauged the flavor symmetry, basically, yes. So, what will violate it is this same kind of triangle graph. So, we have, for example, these, they're not gluons, I guess they're the analogs of W's and Z's. But we have this diagram where what, I'm not very good at drawing these gluon lines or flare. Non-abelian gauge boson lines, actually. So here we have, for example, a script A coming in with some momentum P0. And we'll have, let's say, a coupling to the, how did I write that down? The script V things, which are nu and lambda and b and c and let's just take a convention where all momenta are flowing inward. And then I also have, plus the diagram with lambda interchanged with nu and C interchanged with B, and the vertex is equal to minus I TA gamma mu, if that's a mu and an A. So every vertex has a T gamma attached to it now. So what we expect, in fact, what has to be true, is the graphology is exactly the same except for the presence of those T's. So if I take minus I P0 of, let's just draw it again, nu B and lambda C. So if I take that, I have to get the same answer as I had before, except for the T's, plus the symmetric part, this part here. And that answer is epsilon nu alpha lambda beta times this structure that we've now seen three times already. But it will be the trace. Well, for one of them, it'll be the trace of TA, TB, TC. But the other one will be the trace of TA, TC, TB. So in fact, you get this structure here. So that's the difference diagram-wise between this case and the abelian case up there. And now I think I can get rid of the front one. However, that ain't all. And the reason why it's not all is because, well, why is that, do you think? Unlike the abelian case, this is not the only contributor. So what's different in the non-abelian case? That's a question for the audience. But if the audience is too intimidated, I will tell you the answer. Okay, the difference is we have to examine this, which is the covariant divergence, whereas in the abelian case, we just have the normal divergence. So for the covariant divergence, this will give, this process here is related to the actual partial derivative acting on J. But we also in here have gauge fields multiplying this current, and so we have to take those diagrams into account. We have, for example, we also have A graphs. We have triple A graphs that also contribute an amount similar to that. They turn out to be for symmetry reasons, down by a factor of 3. But that same trace reappears. So we have this diagram where even if we wanted to consider a process of 2Vs and 1A, there are, this product forces us to consider AAA because there are products of A's with each other in here. Yeah.
Just to make sure I understand, the reason we have the covariant derivative now is because the current has a Lie algebra?
Yeah, that's right. It's because, I guess it's underneath here. Yeah, that's correct. It's because we've got that thing now. Oops. So maybe I should put the rear one way up there since it's the most relevant recent one. So yes, it's because of that thing way up there. And there are also other diagrams that are, when you calculate them, you have to, if you're taking these, if you want to look at the expectation value of this with a pair of these, you've also got to look at diagrams that are box type diagrams. And these pentagon things, where you've got an odd number of script A's, of an odd number of axial pieces, and they make a contribution. And to do this whole calculation is lengthy and tedious. And so the final answer, which is given by Bardeen, Bill Bardeen, not the John Bardeen. There's John Bardeen who won two prizes and he had two sons, John, Bill. What's the name of the other guy?
Is it the guy who comes here? Bill Bardeen.
Bill Bardeen. John won the Nobel Prizes. Bill, what's the name? I just off the tip of my tongue. Anyway, they all went into physics. It's Bill that did this, I think. Was he? I don't remember. Anyway, let's not get distracted by that. So, sorry? Yeah, an odd number of those script A things. Sorry. Script A's, those script A's way up there. In order to calculate the matrix element of this with two V's, you've got to include all of these things. And the answer turns out to be negative 1 over 4 pi squared. It's a rather unwieldy answer, times the trace of TA times a quarter. Oops, and I left out the epsilon. Times the trace of TA times a quarter V mu nu V rho sigma plus a 12th A mu nu A rho sigma plus 2/3 of script A mu, script A nu, V rho sigma, plus script A mu, V nu rho, script A sigma, plus V mu nu, script A rho, script A sigma, and then finally minus 8/3 of 4 script A's, mu, nu, rho, and sigma. And each one of those, of course, has an index attached to it. And what I mean by, oopsie daisy, what I mean by, let me just write down over here, I suppose. Let me write down what I mean by these things. I mean script V mu is minus I TA script VA mu. Likewise for this thing. And the field strengths are V mu nu is V mu nu and A mu nu are the field strengths of these things. I just realized I had lousy board etiquette, so I'm going to write it over here. Minus I TA script A mu. And so then V mu nu is the field strength of that thing. Let's actually just commute them like this. V mu, V nu plus A mu, A nu, and A mu nu is the analog of the other one, plus V with A and A with V. There. So with these definitions, V is the field is this kind of field strength, and A is this kind of field strength. And what Bardeen showed is that this is the answer when you work it all out. So it's quite messy. And there is a way of making it look nicer. But it's a very tedious calculation, or rather tedious calculation, to get this answer. But I'm giving it here, well, partly because it's what it really is, but also so you can see that the non-conservation of the non-abelian J mu 5 is significantly different than the other one. Somebody had a question. Yeah.
It's just curiosity, because the second term of that expression looks familiar. It looks like the Chern-Simons kind of.
It is, and it's going to be related to that. Where that's going to come out later. You're right. That's right. People noticed this and followed the chain of reasoning that your intuition is telling us, and we're going to look at that later on as we go through this. So you're quite right. That is what it is. So it's rather unwieldy, and there are ways of cleaning this up to make it look somewhat nicer that turn out to be related to various topological quantities associated with the gauge theory. And we're not going to get to all of that today, but in future classes, we're going to explore this. So it looks nicer if we rewrite, let's write L star is equal to psi bar left I d slash plus I a left slash t psi left and psi bar right I d slash plus I a right slash t a psi right, where I'm writing A left right is equal to mu is equal to V A mu minus or plus A mu. And the usual thing applies for the fermion. Psi left right is equal to 1/2, 1 minus or plus gamma 5 psi. So minus is left, plus is right. So if you shove those definitions back into what we wrote for L star, wherever it is, oh, there, where it is, up there, if what we wrote for L star, then L star breaks up into this, and now you can look at the same problem for J mu left and right, which is psi bar left or right, gamma mu ta psi left right. So left with left, right with right. Not left with right and right with left. Maybe I'll actually be LR, 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 like so. Okay? And so if you write these currents like so, and repeat this calculation, it turns out to look a little bit nicer, in fact, a lot nicer. J mu A left is equal to minus 1 over 24 pi squared epsilon mu nu rho sigma It's still messier, but it's not as messy. TA of D mu A left nu D rho A left sigma plus a half D mu A left nu A left rho A left sigma minus a half A left mu D nu A left rho A left sigma and then plus a half A left mu A left nu D rho A left sigma. And similar for D mu J mu A for the right-handed thing. It's exactly the same expression. In fact, I might as well just do it here. Left, right, 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 right. So exactly the same thing. So, minus or plus. The right-handed one is a plus sign. The left-handed one is a minus sign. But apart from that, they're structurally identical. So people like to work with this. In fact, you can learn whatever you want to learn by just working with the left-handed piece, because the right-handed piece will do exactly the same thing. This kind of thing can also happens with the abelian anomaly. You could just work with left-handed currents and look at that phase, and you'll still get the same kind of answer. So, so what else can I say? Well, some of you noticed this yesterday. That these things, this is mid, there we go. Some of you noticed yesterday that these things, oops, oh, I don't want to do that. Let's see, alpha over 2 pi. This is alpha over 2 pi times f mu nu, f dual mu nu. And this times the trace. So if I have a non-abelian gauge field, I have that. And this is equal to, let me put in the e squareds, over 4 pi squared. This is equal to e squared over 4 pi squared times d mu of epsilon mu nu rho sigma times the trace of a nu d rho a sigma plus 2/3 a nu a rho a sigma, where remember the a's are non-abelian gauge fields. They have a t generator attached to them, like that up there. So this capital A would be a ta times an A. So the abelian case is like this, and the non-abelian case is minus 1 over 24 pi squared times d mu. I don't want to rewrite that over there, but it is also a total divergence. That is the trace of TA times a nu d rho a sigma. But now instead of 2/3, there's actually a factor of a half. Bracket, bracket, bracket. And in both cases, a mu is defined as TA a mu A. So these things are different objects, and they're both writable as total divergences. Probably a lot of you have seen the fact that FF dual can be written as the derivative of something. If it's abelian, this part goes away and you just get that. But the non-abelian case is not, at least for me, quite so obvious that this whole thing is a total divergence, though some of you with experience with Chern-Simons theories recognize that it looked like that, and that's what you get. So these graphs give us a very compact form, and all of this looks nice, except what about higher order corrections? And the answer is, well, there are not any. But what we would expect is we'd get P0 mu. If you remember, I drew this blob here. So what I really think should happen is this should be P0 mu of the original triangle thing plus all the stuff that corrects it. Right? Plus, I don't know, there's one here. And on it goes. And I've got one loop correction. Well, this is a one loop process. I've got all kinds of two loop corrections and all this sort of thing. So what I might expect is that this structure here is going to be destroyed. It's going to be modified or changed in some way. And at the very least, I might expect that d mu for the abelian case, d mu j mu 5, is alpha r over 2 pi, which is the renormalized alpha, times 1 plus something times alpha r plus, let's call this the 2-loop correction, the 3-loop correction, etc., times the renormalized FF dual. So all of these subscript R's now mean renormalized, not right. But this does not happen. And I can't tell you the proof in a matter of 2 minutes, but you can basically show that there are two kinds of diagrams. So there are no such corrections. All C's are zero. That vanishes, everything vanishes. And so when you renormalize the theory, you recover ER squared and the renormalized Fs. This coefficient isn't modified, and there are no other gauge structures of any kind. And the reason for that, I'll sketch it out, and then I guess we've got to stop. The reason for that is that if you take any graph of this form, you've got a bunch of gauge fields, it's going to equal either something like this, where a bunch of gauge fields come off of this fermion, and they interact with this blob, and then this blob spews out more fermions, as the case may be, and more gauge bosons, and so on. Or it's going to produce this other kind, where I've got a big fermion loop, and all kinds of gauge fields fly off of it into this blob that produces all this other stuff. And it turns out that, let's see, in the case of A, you can show that no matter how many things you've got on here, that all of the propagators are convergent. There's no divergent structure in here that can lead you to the anomaly. And that's not obvious. You have to work hard to show it. In the second case, the only way this makes a contribution is if you have two gauge bosons coming off it, in which case you're back to the triangle diagram we had before, and that reproduces exactly the same structure. And the proof of this is due to Adler and Bardeen, and it's called the non-renormalization theorem for the anomaly. In other words, all that gets renormalized is the photon wave function and the charge. There are no other corrections to this, to all orders. And the proof shows this does nil, and this is only the triangle contributes, no matter what order you go to. And you can show that it's due to the divergent structure. Now, curiously enough, to my knowledge, although I didn't have time to do a recent thorough check, but I guess I'll look at it, I don't think the proof has ever been fully carried through for the non-abelian case. We have a lot of circumstantial evidence that the non-abelian anomaly is likewise not renormalized differently, but the graphology, to the best of my knowledge, has not been carried through. Because there is a relationship of this current to topological structures here and here, that leads people to believe this is not renormalized. But at this point, to the best of my knowledge, no one has worked out the analog of this for the non-abelian case. But I should actually do another check to be sure. Yeah.
Is anomaly, does it also...
Sorry?
The presence of an anomaly, does it always have to be related to a divergence?
By which you mean the divergence of a current or the divergence of a graph?
Of a graph.
Well, that's an interesting question. It appears to be, but the graph, in terms of the exercise I understood happened in the tutorial yesterday, the graph is linearly divergent, but it's actually a subtle difference in between two linearly divergent integrals that leads to a finite value at the graph level that gives you the surface term. And what you can show is no matter how you regulate, if you regulate that thing away, you find that your regulator forces some other structure to appear that reproduces the anomaly. That's in this, well, it's a paper I did with Victor Elias and Jerry McKee on. Dimensional regularization gets rid of things that have linear divergences, but you find that in the trace, dimreg forces you, dimensional regularization, which I understand you guys haven't done too much of, but you find in the gamma trace, the consistency of the regularization procedure forces the anomaly to reappear. But basically, I guess if I can write it down, the way I understand the anomaly at the graph level is it's the difference, it ultimately emerges from the difference between a graph like this and a graph like that. All the rest is clutter you need to keep track of, but in terms of what happens, so you might think, well, let's let k go to k plus p, and then this integral becomes that integral, but in fact it doesn't. Yauch and Rohrlich showed in the 1950s that the difference, I guess I shouldn't have gotten rid of the chalk, the difference between these two integrals, I think, is minus I pi squared over 2 p mu. And it turns out if you choose a regulator, people thought, well, let's just choose a regulator to get rid of it. But every regulator you choose introduces some other structure that effectively reproduces that. So in that sense, I would say, it's really the difference between when you take the current divergence of this triangle, you end up getting a structure that looks like that, which gives you that extra p mu, which forces, wherever it disappeared to on the board, which forces a non-zero answer. So that's how I would look at that. For those of you that wondered about the Ward identities, I can talk to you privately afterward about that. Some of you asked me yesterday. Okay? Sorry, we're a bit over time.